Off the Ball, GAA.
Ewan is actually saying, guys, come out and tell us the facts. Tell us what's happened. We've so much to be going on with in Mayo GAA.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
They say it's Tuesday morning. Good morning. You're very welcome to Off the Ball Breakfast on the 17th of June. 0879 180 180 is the WhatsApp number. Hit us up on YouTube, type in Off the Ball, click us, and you'll see that we are live. You'll see two other people with me right now on your screen to my right. Having conducted more research into the genealogy of his lineage, it becomes abundantly clear that this individual comes from a family of car manufacturers, factory owners, and movie makers, because he always produces. It's Arthur O'D in blue.
This is a new thing.
This has become a feature the last few mornings. Yeah, we're going to miss this.
Back.
Introducing next. A titan of the game as guest co-host this morning. I don't have to do the rest of this.
No, go for it.
Yeah. I want to hear this now. An individual so good at talking about the golf and the football, they made him do it exclusively. But today he's back to his roots, talking about other sports that he also likes. It's the imperious, multi-award winning, reigning Emerald Sports Broadcaster of the Year, Nate Dog Murphy.
Almost forgot about that.
That doesn't come up enough, does it?
No, it doesn't come up enough. You're right.
Shall we start with a power ranking?
If you indulge me. I'm up for it and come. It's your show.
What was your favourite Rory McIlroy golf club fling and anger at the US Open? Was it the one down the fairway, the ricochet off the bag, or when he smashed the tee marker?
Oh, the ricochet off the bag. Ricochet off the bag felt
this
like
absolutely incredible.
Yeah. Like a one-off.
If I tried that 100 times again,
like
he said afterwards.
CGI. You're wondering what would have happened if it had gone a slightly different direction. So as he flings it, he sort of looks to his caddy, doesn't realise it's coming straight back and smacks him in the face.
So that's your one?
Oh, I think it's got to be that one.
What's two and three?
Two is the smashing up the tee.
Yeah. There was no charm in it.
No, that's the bit that you're getting a... You shouldn't do that. But there was a lot of... No, he wasn't alone, and there was a lot of club throwing across the 4 days because it was a very, very frustrating golf course for them to play. Mm. And Rory, like any golfer, has thrown clubs previously. It just feels like he's throwing a lot more clubs right now. And we thought he'd never throw a club again after winning the Masters, that everything would be sort of sweetness and light and rainbows and all that good stuff. And bizarrely, it's been anything but.
The fairway one was kind of nice. It was a nice fling to it. There was a good... He got a lot in it. But there's so much to take from the anger levels at the US Open, because you have those three moments, Rory. You have Shane Lowry talking to the golf course when he misses another putt and what he said. I did the quote yesterday. And then whatever player reportedly destroyed that clubhouse.
Was it Wyndham Clark?
Yeah, that's the name I mentioned yesterday, but it's still reported.
You'd be fine. No, I think it was Wyndham Clark, and who has previous... Because you remember was it the PGA? He threw his driver behind him and it went straight through the advertising hoarding and nearly clattered one of the stewards. Again, what will happen now is somebody will hit somebody with one of the clubs and, well, that's the end of that.
Yeah.
That's the end
There'll
of that.
There'll be no more power rankings of that. I won't be able to do
that'll
it.
Be, that'll be...
Someone will have got hurt.
There was another one which I can't repeat. I gave the exact quote on Golf Weekly on Friday with a fair warning of, if you've children in the car... Mm. Now's the time to switch off for a minute. Tyrrell Hatton on Friday ended up in sort of shoulder-high weeds. And before he'd even taken the shot, I was like, Ewan Murray's going to be apologising here. Obviously, as we know in the UK, because of their Ofcom rules, if anybody says anything, you have to apologise automatically, whether you have to apologise 10 times an hour. I was like, this isn't going to end well. So he just sort of chunks it out. And there's 10 seconds. There was two expletives in there I'd never even heard before. Mm-hmm. And the great thing was, as he was walking down the fairway, he was getting slightly further away from the microphone, but the expletives were getting better. You're like, no, follow him. And eventually, you could almost hear a half laugh in the background from somebody on the commentary, and the apology comes through.
John Duggan says to us yesterday, Rory needs a break. And so does Shane. But of course, the Open is upon us in Portrush. That's not going to happen. Would you agree with the sentiment, though?
I don't think Shane needs a break. No. I think Shane is playing maybe the best golf he's ever played consistently. Last week being an exception on a golf course that we thought would suit him down to the ground. I think Shane's frustration is that he's playing so well and hasn't had a win. Like, generally, Shane was an inconsistent golfer who, when he won, won big. Mm. Whereas now, actually, he's there week in, week out competing, but he's not able to get the job done, and he's having a bit of Sunday fever where that's turning out to be his worst round, and it's getting him away from him a little bit. And obviously then he's getting frustrated on the course and he's getting criticism for that, and it's probably all boiling over. But I think Shane is going to the Travelers Championship this week, signature event, and will be bloody excited about it. Mm. And then coming back to Portrush, no, I think right now the last thing Shane needs is a break. Rory's a different scenario because I've never really seen anything like
this. What's going on here? What's going on with McIlroy?
I don't know, like, this is something we're going to be talking about and referencing, I think, for years, when other people have great sporting achievements. Yeah. Of how do you go on, like, when, I don't know, if somebody comes out of nowhere this year and wins an All-Ireland, it'll be, well, how do you back it up next year? Or do you worry it'll be a Rory McIlroy style feeling where just doesn't live up to the hype?
Yeah, yeah. Like, these things are not the same, but Armagh, you know, look extremely competitive and motivated this year, but everything is a bit different here. There's a story of Pep Guardiola when he won the then Club World Cup, as the format was at the time, for Barcelona, and he collapsed onto the floor and his assistant asked him, what's wrong? And he was like, I've nothing left to achieve. Started crying. And I do wonder, Nate, if Rory McIlroy had his time back from the Monday morning after the Masters victory, would he have gone about the proceeding 2 months differently, or the following 2 months differently? You know, because he seems so uptight. Like, he seems everything that you imagine he wouldn't
not be. Not himself, and
publicly anyway. Maybe privately he's a happy man.
What we've heard privately is that he has been enjoying himself, and he's, you know, he was off at the Europa League final, which maybe isn't going to cheer anybody up, but, especially, you know, he's been doing things that he wants to do. And even, you know, he spoke at the press conference last week about going playing tennis at the weekends with Harry Diamond, where he'd stop playing tennis because he'd worry he'd injure himself, and that might impact on his hopes of winning the Masters. I think what we've seen is the toll that trying to win the Masters has taken on him, but also how much energy he's put into it over the last decade. Way more than we even imagined. And we've spoken about this nonstop for 10 years of, the entire year revolves around the Masters, and he'd say no, and everyone go, no, there's three other majors, and just win another one, and then maybe the Masters will come. It's clear that all that's been in his head, his entire driving force at all times, has been, how do I put myself in the position to win the Masters? Mm. And he's really struggling to...
No, he doesn't have a plan.
...recalibrate of, well, actually, the next bit is, you've got five majors, you need to get to seven, you need to get past Seve on five, you need to get past Nick Faldo on six, that there's no question, not I think there is for most people, that you're the greatest European golfer of all time, be the most successful. Then you try and aim for 10. And maybe that's where he just needs the break of, all right, I need to go and realise that, yes, I've got to the summit of Everest here, but that's not the end of my life. That's not the end of my career. And actually winning all these other things will also be a huge, huge achievement. But he's in such a strange place, and you hope he needs to snap out of it. Like, this isn't the Rory McIlroy that people have fallen in love with. The reason that everyone was so excited on that Sunday night at Augusta wasn't just the drama. It's that he'd become this people's champion because of everything he'd gone through over the last 4 or 5 years, and how brutally honest and how public his disappointments were. Like, how many times have you seen him in tears on TV over the previous 4 or 5 years where, like, this mattered? To suddenly turn around and go, well, none of it really matters anymore now. Everyone's a bit like, well, this is not what we want.
There's such a wonderful thing with golf, I feel, where every outlier and everything just serves to reinforce how good Tiger Woods was. It's just like everything just, in my mind, goes back to it. Like, you're like, it's exactly what you're talking about. Mm. How could I possibly drive myself on? It's just, yeah, I'm sure it makes sense.
The argument will be that Tiger never reached his Everest because he wanted to beat the 18.
Potentially.
Of Jack Nicklaus. So that was his goal, was always that.
But McIlroy has done his Everest. He has climbed it. He's just climbing down now. And the climbing down is no crack. It's also more dangerous.
But you could argue that, understandably, Tiger, for his talent, his Everest was trying to beat Jack Nicklaus's number, as insane as that would have sounded.
Is Rory a quantity great, if you get me? Does he want to accumulate as many majors as possible? Because he's only, as you say, he's only ever thought about the Masters, so we don't really know how much he wants to win. So, like, is the real struggle for him, he's like, I don't have a plan beyond this. There's actually no goal beyond winning the Masters, and I'm a young man.
Well, it's strange in that other players are missing one for the career Grand Slam. And listen, we talk about Rory in a way that we don't talk about anybody else. But Jordan Spieth went to the PGA, and it's just a non-event. And you know, if Jordan Spieth came out after the US Open going, oh, I don't really care anyways, all that's in my head is the PGA to get that career Grand Slam. Yeah. What are you talking about? Like, win as many majors as you possibly can. But again, I think it just goes to serve how dominant this has been in his career and probably everything else he's done, and how it's probably stopped him winning other majors was his obsession, his maybe unnecessary obsession with winning the Masters. Now, it does get you onto a higher plane that, you know, 7, 8, 9 majors doesn't get you onto if you have 3 of all of the others, because he has the career Grand Slam. But it, there's probably a way as well of being, not disappointed, but underwhelmed by how the last few weeks have gone without taking it out on everybody else and just it seemingly acting massively out of character.
Yeah, like, here's the thing as well. If McIlroy had the exact same results as he's had since the Masters, but had a different attitude, I think people would still be parting with him, wouldn't they? They'd be like, oh, he's kind of happy-go-lucky. He's kind of, look, I've done what I wanted to do. I'm just playing golf now. And everyone was like, oh, that's cool. But it's the manner, isn't it? It's the manner of which he's gone about it and the way he's talking to media. Saturday night at the US Open was something, like you say, out of character. But no, it's in his character. We just don't see it that often. But that question where he looks to his right and he says, you know, a little bit, yeah, when asking, is it the media that he's annoyed at?
Yeah, and he never went fully into it. And he was just about, and somebody jumped in with another question as to what he meant. And I think if you watch that interview, it's noticeable there's certain people he gives more in-depth answers to. So when Greg Allen asks him a question, he's a bit more comfortable answering. And that was the same in the pre-tournament press conference as well. There was a different tone for different people asking the question. So clearly, he's very pissed off about what happened with the driver and how that became public. Now, again, his language around that was off also, because this idea that journalists leaked the situation, just obviously journalists don't leak it, they just report on what happened. It also isn't a big deal. It became a big deal because he didn't speak about it for weeks on end. So everyone was wondering what the hell happened. I think that press conference on Saturday evening, or those interviews, it felt like it was going fine and it was sort of him and the journalist. There was just those couple of lines of, I think at this stage I'm entitled to do whatever the hell I want. And that last bit of, well, what do you expect tomorrow? I just want to get out of here.
Like, again, under 4.5 hours. And he's having a good round. He shot a 67.
Yeah, and look, that's the maybe old Rory of sort of freewheeling here. There's no pressure on. We know that he has the golf game when the pressure's off
that,
to
yeah, he
to
said
do
that
incredible
when
things.
He stopped caring as much. He played better. But he cared so much on that Sunday in the Masters.
He's wondering if he'll ever care again.
Yeah. Like, if he never wins another tournament, never mind a major, he'll still have achieved everything he set out to achieve.
He will, but life it would feel unfulfilled like that. Because I would have argued almost pre-winning the Masters that Rory had achieved a level of greatness in his career beyond any of his contemporaries of this sort of post-Tiger generation, from his level of consistency over a decade, of just his being, of how open he was, how invested everybody became, that was way beyond Koepka, say, for example, who also has 5 major titles. But at the same time, that can go the opposite way very quickly if this was to continue over the space of a few years. Like, he's coming to Portrush in a month's time and people want to see the Rory McIlroy show, and they want to see the guy who just won the Masters back in home soil with a big smile on his face, happy to be there, ready to compete, no sense of a Masters hangover. This is an Open Championship. We had a quadruple bogey on the first hole in 2019, battled unbelievably well on the Friday to try and make the cut, and you could see what it meant to him. And that's the Rory McIlroy people want to see when he's in Portrush next week, that this matters. It's not I've won the Masters, this, I don't care that much about any of this anymore. This is an Open Championship in Portrush. You need to turn up.
Does that happen in golf? You know, that kind of, I don't know, was it Michael Jordan or someone else? That kind of thing about, you know, it's someone seeing me tonight as their first time, and you kind of always have to operate at a level. Does that happen in golf to a degree? Like, it's kind of a bit like that aspect you're putting on about almost putting on a show is that's fascinating. I never really thought about that before.
By putting on a show, like, you can't, he's not going to go out and try and play badly.
Sorry.
But I mean, almost just his general, I want to be,
demeanor,
sense of, I want to be here. Like, golf is definitely, in modern golf, it's a good point of, like, guys are just turning up at tournaments sometimes and there's so much money involved. It doesn't matter as much. And I mean, we were talking about that on Sunday ahead of the final round, that the dynamic in majors has nearly changed in a way for someone like JJ Spawn, who ends up winning it, or Carlos Ortiz, say, for example, went to LIV. So he's right in contention. And 10 years ago, a Carlos Ortiz might be going, right, actually, third place isn't too bad for me here because it's probably going to get me my card for the next couple of years. It's going to get me into the rest of the majors, set my family up. I can relax. I'm not on a bubble anymore. Whereas now Carlos Ortiz is at LIV and he's set up for life financially. So even though he's achieved very little in the game, he's able to go into that Sunday going, well, all I need to think about is winning because it makes no difference to me whether I finish second or 10th.
Yeah.
And the money in golf, I think, has changed that part of it of, does it really matter if you finish 5th or if you finish 25th? And some guys have that. And I think McIlroy, in fairness, again, going back to the last 10 years, always had that of, how can I finish as high up the leaderboard as I possibly can? Mm. Whereas I think the money in golf now has made it way easier for guys to just phone it in if they feel like it.
This date next month, the Open starts the 17th of July in Portrush. Final word on the golf for now, Nathan. Shane Lowry, does he need to curb his temper? Or does that make Shane Lowry Shane?
Which I think he's clearly not going to, because if you read he said it what he put out on Instagram, is that,
but people want him to,
that
it seems.
Fire within him is what makes him the golfer.
Is it uncalled for? Because it was like a lot of like talking about his behaviour.
I think there's definitely
behavior.
Parts of it that are over the top. Some of the conversations and the criticisms he has with his caddy, I think people are very uncomfortable with. Now,
the way he talks,
I think
to the
in
caddy.
General, when you delve into player caddy relationships, people are going to be uncomfortable with that dynamic.
Is his particularly bad?
It can be at times. Yeah, I think, you know, he's looking, when he's angry and annoyed, for someone or something to take it out on. I know he's working with Bob Rotella at the moment, who has worked with McIlroy, has worked with Harrington. You suspect Shane is a different challenge and a different type of personality to those guys. Does he know the other way? So has he, you know, has he given it 6 months of, I don't know if you ever saw that European Tour video where it's Tyrrell Hatton and all the angry guys on tour, and when something shocking happens, they just give a thumbs up to sort of funnel their anger. Like, if he was to give that sort of attitude a real run, would it make him a lesser golfer? Or he's a competitive spirit, so he has that sort of old school, he just wants to beat the guys. And is that, when you're front and centre in modern golf, going to get you a level of stick? I think it is. Like, you have to remember, all the LIV guys are gone. He's up to top 10 in the world. So the things that are happening on the golf course, I would say, probably always happened on the golf course with Shane. He just didn't have as many cameras on him as he does right now. So I think, you know, if you're same as Rory, if you're smashing up tee markers, if you're having a go at your caddy and it's all caught on microphone, if you're just generally acting a little bit pissed off, I think you're going to have to take the stick that comes with that. Shane has clearly said again, he's not going to change, like it or lump it. And he's a very different person off the course. I've always felt that people underestimate Shane in a way, that there's been this long-held attitude of, Jez, he just can't believe he's out there with all these lads.
Yeah, I know.
Young lad, played a bit of golf, like, sort of got an Irish Open as an amateur. It all just fell into place from there. But geez, he doesn't belong with the Rory McIlroys of this world, whereas he very much belongs with the Rory McIlroys. And the reason he belongs is because he's an unbelievable competitor. He's a brilliant, brilliant golfer. Like, again, he has a short game.
Do people
to dive
talk about
for.
His actual game enough?
Yeah, I think so. But once you're people spoke more about his game when he wasn't as big a figure in the, because they didn't really have anything else to talk about. Whereas now we're seeing a lot of his personality and we're seeing a lot more of him on TV, and he's obviously with Rory all of the time. So that almost brings a fame from being in his shadow constantly. So I don't see Shane changing. I think he would look at it and go, he's competing at a level consistently that he never has done before, and this is the way he's behaving. I do feel with all of them, we're probably just one step away from one guy going that bit too far and everybody coming down them like a ton of bricks, and you just want to make sure you're not that guy.
Look, every show is the Nathan Murphy show, but this one particularly is right up your street. We've done Rory and Shane, we have Mayo to come, and also League of Ireland. So last night there was two games, Nathan. So Pats nil, Shells won. Ali Coote with the only goal of the game, a great one by Mark Coyle actually. In the lead up to that goal, there was chances for Pats. Jamie Lennon, Mason Media, the goalkeeper Joseph Anang nearly got on the end of a corner in stoppage time, but Shells held on for a 1-0 win. But you were at the other game. Drogheda won Shamrock Rovers 2. Jota actually took the lead. George Cooper scored. Then Graham Burke equalised with a very questionable free kick, but well taken. And then Aaron Green got the winner in the second half. A beautiful assist by Danny Mandrao, which means that Rovers are now 9 points clear, although they have two games played more than second place Bows. But undeniably, Nathan, the big story from yesterday when it comes to Irish football in general is Drogheda United not playing in Europe.
Yeah, and obviously it casts a shadow over the game last night and everyone was devastated. Even though from the outside it felt over the weekend that this was the most likely scenario because Drogheda had missed the deadline. It basically comes down to that. I think the reality maybe only set in last night that, okay, the draw is happening today and we're not going to be there. And when you win the cup, you have your day. Like, you have that great day where they beat Derry in the final and you've got the 24, 48 hours of celebrations. But then the biggest bonus is this bit, particularly for Drogheda, who, you know, it's very rare that they compete in Europe. It's over a decade since they last had games in Europe where not only do you get the bit of glamour of the home tie, like you get to travel and you get the 700-800 people who are going to hop on their plane and going to go somewhere in Europe and regardless of result are going to have a bloody good time. And you speak to any League of Ireland player, you speak to any League of Ireland fan, it's the European games that they always, always talk about. So for that to be taken away from them like this, and with, listen, they're having an incredible season again, and you'd hope that they force their way in and that they're a bit more on top of ensuring that there's no such issues next year. But as Kevin Doherty said, and we'll hear from him, like, there's no guarantees Kevin Doherty manages in Europe again. This might have been his one and only chance. You think he's doing such a good job, it will come.
Well, that's it. That's the line. Look, we don't often play videos at this stage of the show, but this is well worth playing. This is Nathan in conversation with the Drogheda manager, Kevin Doherty, following last night's game.
Kevin, fair to say this is one of the more difficult days of your career.
Yeah, we've spoken about other ones before. Yeah, it's tough, tough day. But the one thing that you can be very happy with is the performance tonight. And certainly you wouldn't be happy with the performance of certain individuals that took the game away from us. But yeah, look, there's no point in pretending it was a tough day, yeah.
Yeah. The news obviously couldn't have come at a worse time either, just a couple of hours before kick-off in one of your biggest games of the season. What was the reaction like in the dressing room as word came through?
It's tough, yeah, of course. Of course, because everyone obviously knows the case today and very confident. And every word I said, I don't know if you saw my press conferencing on Friday, every word I said, stick boy, was very confident. Trust everything that was being done. And unfortunately, it didn't go for us. And it's tough, don't pretend. But I have to be absolutely, like, it's amazing. The players going out against playing against the best team in the league by a mile. Like, they're the best team in the league by a mile. And our lads are going out. And we're going in 1-0 at half time. Like, we're going in 1-0 at half time, which is when we're missing players after playing really, really well. And then gets taken away from us.
Tomorrow was going to be a big day for you as well in your managerial career and plotting games against European opposition. Is the emotion, is it sadness, is it anger?
Yeah, it's a bit of everything. Yeah, you're right. You dream of it, like, you know, I might never manage in Europe. Like, who knows? There's players in there that won the FA Cup and burst their backsides to do it. There's lads assigned here because we're playing in Europe. So I was disappointed.
Have you any sense of what this means for the club in terms of not having the €500,000? Like, was that a factor in going full time? Like, is there a longer term impact away from just the footballing side of it?
Probably. Again, look, I haven't, the nature of it, I was here, we're coming, I haven't really spoken. I was trying to, again, I said this on Friday before I had to try and focus on the football as hard as it was. I had to go into the dressing room earlier on to explain this stuff, try and explain it.
And what was the attitude in the dressing room? Was it, we're going out and go fight for the club and prove everyone wrong, or is everyone just a bit down and what's the point?
Again, it's yeah, this is where, look, maybe it's great. I'm getting all these experiences early enough in my managerial career. I'm finding different ways to motivate people because, like, I'm in the car on the way up, and I'm literally, because I found out on the way up, and I don't really, I'm sort of more spontaneous. I don't plan things, like, I don't plan, I'm going to say this, but when I get in there, I was quite emotional myself and felt that whatever I needed to say to motivate the players worked, because you could see it. But that's not for me, that's the players. They're just, and my staff, like, we're all affected by this. Yeah. We really are.
And the town, like, it's bigger than you, it's bigger than the players.
Yeah, it is.
Nathan, what do you think of that?
I don't know, Colin. What did you think of that? What are you eating
very,
there?
Very emotional.
What are you eating?
Very emotive.
Very emotive and very emotional. And yeah, Kevin Doherty wears his heart in his sleeve. And I'm sure he was incredibly excited about what was to come, particularly with how well they've been playing this season. I was making that point that, you know, last year, obviously, they end up in a promotion relegation playoff, but they win the cup. Whereas this year, they're competing right at the top of the league and they're going into Europe in form and with a game plan that they have full confidence in and an ability to pull off a couple of results. Mm. So it's, look, there's no sugarcoating it. It's disastrous for Drogheda on the sporting side of things, but also on the financial side of things. €525,000 guaranteed that they're now going to miss out on. Trivella, their owners, obviously deep pockets, but we know the way ownerships work. They're not just going to keep throwing more and more money into it. So did they just cover that 500,000, whatever plans that were there to spend that, whether it was on the playing squad? You know, Kevin Doherty signed a new contract. I'm sure a big part of that was the fact that European football was coming in very quickly. So as the dust starts to settle on this over the coming days, I suspect the conversations will change slightly as to how exactly this was allowed to happen. I think everybody has stuck together because they needed to stick together, in that they felt they had done as much as they could, and maybe there were misunderstandings along the way or lack of information for Drogheda about what they had to do in terms of submitting forms by the 1st of March, which they missed out on. We could even see today, John Fallon has a story in The Examiner that the change of deadline from June 3rd to 1st March was first circulated to the FAI back in October. But it seems that never made its way to Drogheda. Now, again, the beginning of October, obviously, Drogheda haven't even won the cup. Mm. Drogheda don't own Silkeborg at this stage. Silkeborg haven't qualified for Europe. So
there's a huge degree of sympathy here for Drogheda, no? For the reasons you just stated.
Yes, but at the same time,
they should have had the foresight.
Well, it's not foresight. I would have thought that, firstly, when you win the cup, you go to the FAI or you go to UEFA and say, what are the various things we need to do? Then, when they buy Silkeborg, and there's a possibility that Silkeborg could be in Europe, you go back and say, what impact is this potentially going to have? Because again, there's obviously a greater debate about multi-club ownership and all of that. But while UEFA are very strict on their deadlines, they seem more than happy for teams to use every possible loophole to get around multi-club ownership. So Nottingham Forest, for example, only went through, I think it was the end of April, as to what they were going to do around multi-club ownership. And it was, you know, blind trusts and selling of shares and lots of different. The UEFA, I think, don't really care what you do as long as on the 1st of March you told them what you were going to do.
Okay.
And Drogheda never did that. And that's ultimately what has cost them here. And UEFA were not for moving.
Yeah.
And the fact that it went to the Court of Arbitration for Sport and that UEFA won this, you know, you could say it's David versus Goliath, but I think it just backed up that UEFA's rule book is set in stone around these dates. So I think there'll be a lot of hard questions been asked around Drogheda as to how this was missed, because like, this is £500,000. Never mind the sporting side of it. It's just an incredibly costly mistake that's going to have an impact on the league. It might have a short-term benefit for Shamrock Rovers. We'll hear in the next while. Shamrock Rovers were going to start in the first qualifying round as seeds, and so were St. Patrick's Athletic. Drogheda got a bye through to the second qualifying round because UEFA put more stock in the cup than on qualifying through the league. Whereas now, Rovers may end up getting that bye through to the second round because Rovers are actually the top seeded team in the first round qualifiers. So that would be a short term benefit. The long term impact is that the coefficient is still going to be divided by four, even though there'll only be three teams playing in the competition. But what an absolute sickener. I say last night, and then a double sickener, because I thought it was a shocking decision to give the free kick. It maybe it hits his hand, but he's just running back. It's a natural position. Nobody in the ground has seen this. I don't even think any of the two Shamrock Rovers players around the defender have seen it. And it really just rubs salt in the wounds. But yeah, I think now that, as you say, the emotion will fall away over the next few years and the anger will increase, and there'll be more and more questions as to who knew what, when, and how to draw it and not have their ducks in a row around this.
But people will remember last week we did a piece with the Athletic's Matt Slater and it was more about the schedule of football and the state of it, but we led off with the Crystal Palace pending decision about their participation in the Europa League after winning the FA Cup, of course, but John Textor also shares in Lyon, so there's a conflict there. And I have to say, Nathan, when I heard this decision yesterday evening about Drogheda, my first maybe cynical reaction was, well, I bet you Palace would be allowed to play, but it is different. You've outlined why there in terms of the paperwork, and Textor owns, was it 43% of Palace, says he has nothing to do with the running of the club, although apparently he had a big hand in the appointment of Oliver Glasner. But basically that's Steve Parish's gig and Textor sits back, whereas there's no denying, there's no ambiguity whatsoever with Drogheda's ownership and their involvement at the club.
No, I don't think that's what's up for debate here. That might have been a separate debate as to initially what they were going to do and how they were going to find a way to get around all of this. But the problem is they missed the deadline to even make a decision as to how they were going to do all that. So, like, that's it's a deadline issue rather than an ownership issue, because, as I say, lots of different clubs and an ever increasing amount of clubs are finding themselves in a multi club ownership model. And, you know, whether it's Manchester City and Girona or Lyon and Crystal Palace, they're all different ownership setups. But UEFA seem very comfortable with clubs finding whatever loophole they want to get through it, as long as they can go, oh, there's a division here and it's not the same guy making all the main decisions at both clubs, as long as you tell them by the 1st of March what you're going to do. And Drogheda clearly just missed the boat on that completely. So, yeah, it's I think it's just very sad for everybody involved. Yep. As you say, you could tell from Kevin Doherty just how devastated he is about it.
We'll have more on that after the break, but we've plenty of YouTube comments coming in, including Arthur's sartorial choices today. But how about, lads, a return to the much missed and extremely loved Who Gets It First?
Who Gets It First?
Welcome back to Who Gets It First. For those just joining us for the first time, Who Gets It First is a game where the two other people in studio play you, the audience, in one question about football. So YouTube, I hope you're ready, because you are playing the football mighty brain combination of Nathan and Arthur. You both ready?
Sure.
You both?
Sure, yeah.
You want this?
Yeah.
You want this?
Big time. I have a different approach.
Show us, yeah. Do you?
I'm ready.
Okay. So we're going to play the game of the clubs. Now I'm going to name the club and you guess the player. All right? Where the player started.
This is a cheap knockoff of a crappy quiz round.
Well, it's the one I gave you, the crappy quiz. Yes, the one I created. Yeah. So the first club that this player played. I'll actually give you the first and last club. I'll give you the first and last club.
I hate this player started. Arthur's brilliant at this.
We're playing together.
On the same team.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I love that guy.
Watch his workload just diminish here and let you do it all. So this player started with Welling United and finished with Portsmouth.
Paul Merson.
No, I like your thinking though, because I feel if you just give the first club, it's kind of pointless. So he started with Welling United and he finished with Portsmouth, and he has many clubs in between, and there's many years apart. But that's just the way I'm starting. Now, if anyone gets it off that, that's worth 2 points.
Finished at Portsmouth.
Tony Hibbert, that's funny, isn't it? Zed Leplin, Fergal O'Hanlon, Berger. No, not Berger.
Is that all you're giving us?
Patrick Berger.
No.
It's hardly Patrick Berger starting at Welling United.
Well, people have strange
finished
stories,
at
you know.
Portsmouth.
And they're both as orthodox as you. So he finishes or starts at Welling United. Do you want a second club? Are you ready for a second club?
Hold on now a second. We have a good think about this. So we're thinking Harry Redknapp era Portsmouth, which is sort of Cullum's. You always have to think of where the quizmaster is asking the question from.
You wasted too much time. You wasted
you
too much
us
time.
Any clubs. You're taking the type away all morning.
I'm going to give you any clubs. And yet, James on YouTube is straight in there with the correct answer. That is Steve Finnan. Congratulations, YouTube.
See, I was right, though. You just got to get your mindset into all of the answers are sort of that 03 to.
Could you name his next club after Welling United? I didn't know he played for this club, and it's a well-known club, Birmingham City.
Okay.
Then he went on loan to Notts County, signed permanently for Notts County. Who did he go to then? Steve Finnan.
Well, he didn't go to Liverpool.
No, there's a club between.
Who did Steve Finnan? He went to Fulham after Liverpool, was it? Directly after
Fulham
Liverpool.
Fulham before? Yeah, under Jan Tagana.
Oh, yeah.
Liverpool signed him. And then where does he go from Liverpool? A very hipster move.
He went to Spain, didn't he?
Yeah, specifically.
No, Ian Hart went to Levante.
Yeah.
Steve Finnan went to Where does Stephen Ingle? He didn't go to Vallecano.
Technically, he didn't go professional until he started at Birmingham.
But it's his first club down where did you say there? Vallecano? No.
Yeah.
No. No, it's almost like saying Spain in Spanish where he went.
Oh, you went to Espanol.
Very good. Well done. Well done, you. All right, plenty of comments coming in here. 8:05 morning, we have Keith Tracy. Thanks for playing, by the way. We have Keith Tracy waiting in the wings. Good morning from Melbourne, lads. Have you on for the commute home from work? Are we a commute home from work type of gang? Is this the energy you want?
That's the they're messages you like. You know, you're nice. Giving them the connection with home, Cullum.
It is nice.
What's the weather like in Melbourne? They're heading into winter there, so.
What do we know? Yeah, it gets pretty cold in Melbourne at this time of year. Fountain Sound Foreland Art is waiting for me to read this out all morning. Is it my live doc? Can you read out Fountain Sound Foreland's comments, please? I will. My respect for Arthur has gone up thanks to that gorgeous jersey. While Greg Caffrey says good morning from Ukraine, lads. That's a top level jersey. Do you want to explain the jersey? That was some sort of beautiful centenary jersey. Republic of Ireland jersey worn, was it? 2016?
I believe so, yeah. No, not 2016. It says 1924 on the back, so but it wasn't 2024 either. I don't know.
2022 would have made sense maybe, but
Maybe.
I thought it was a centenary jersey.
They wore it once at the Aviva for Fendi, didn't they? Yeah. Didn't Ogbeni score in that game or something?
It was a guitar. It's Callum Robinson peak time.
It's the glory days.
Dermot Keane has a question for you.
Okay.
Yeah. What's Nathan's thoughts on Brandel Shamley's call for players to be fined for their expletives?
Get out of it, is what he's saying
to you.
No. It is professional sport. This is high level stuff.
Yeah.
You're allowed to get angry. You're allowed to get annoyed. Sometimes they go that little bit too far. And, you know, smashing up tee boxes and stuff like that is probably sort of pushing it. And again, with Rory, it was the fact there was four or five different things over the course of the week. It sort of all accumulates. I think if you get a bit of bad luck or you hit a bad shot, you're perfectly entitled to curse.
Yeah, it's fine. Who cares? Keep it reasonable. Don't be, going off.
If you wanted half an hour, we're past the watershed at what time? In the morning as well.
Yeah, watershed
9 a.m. and the kids are probably in school by then, so we can say whatever we want. I'll give you the full Tyrrell Hatton outburst. See what you think then.
Well, it's not, summer holidays for some, but.
Summer holidays though for the ones in secondary school, so they're well able for it.
Carlino,
they'll be delighted with it.
Carlino 888 has joined us from Manila.
Would you get away from that? I think people are just making up locations.
That's the problem. We've no way of proving it.
Send us a geotag. Hugo Fallon is also in Melbourne, so there's two listeners in Melbourne. Manila, as you mentioned.
Why don't they meet up?
Arthur. What you say there?
They should meet up. A little watch party.
That's cute. Hugo Fallon's back straight away, cooking some McDonald's curry sauce for dinner. Rugby today, please. Yeah, you'll get your rugby start on there. And Shay Geelong Cats commute home from work for me as well. I would have thought we were a day starting type of crowd. But that's interesting.
Well, it's quite difficult for them when they're in the other part of the world.
No, save us for it. Get your news late every day.
It's a live show.